Hello and welcome again to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com and BlogTalkRadio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. It's a shortened episode tonight due to the World Series currently trying to revive back from a short rain delay. John, how are you?
I'm great. Jazz won. Cubs are in the World Series. And even if they lose, that means the Indians win. And, you know, those are the two teams that I would root for to watch in a World Series. So, you know, life's good.
All right. And Devin, you're good. Yeah. You're just all about history tonight.
I am all about the history, Alan.
All right. All right. Well, you know, we'll get to the World Series in a minute because I'm sure we're going to have to take a break once they get back to action. But with that said, let's jump into the Jazz. Since our last episode, the Jazz are 2-2, right?
3-2 now.
3-2. Well, no, we recorded after their first game, so they were 2-2 since our last episode.
No, we didn't record last night.
No, but did we record after the Portland game?
The notes I sent you this morning, they were 2-2. Now they're 3-2 because they just won the Mavericks game.
All right, 3-2.
I know of what I speak.
Yes,
you do. Yeah, the Jazz are 3-2. A winning team.
Yes, they are. And there's a lot to talk about in this good stretch of games. I mean, none bigger than last night's Spurs game, but where do you want to start?
Well, let's go ahead and start with the Spurs game because that was the real signature win. It was great that they won this Dallas game, but they're expected to win. They're expected to win both of their home games, and Mavericks are looking like, the window's finally closed for them. But the Spurs win on the road without Hayward and to do it by 15, that was far and away the best thing that's happened so far this season.
Sorry, I was a little distracted because Devin's over here. Devin's over here rooting for something. Devin, what are you rooting for?
The rain delay is over.
Okay.
People are going to be listening. They'll be like, yes, Devin, that was last night. I know.
Oh, yeah. The game started and they got a guy in first. Okay. So it's just the two of us now.
Yeah. Well, Devin hasn't walked back yet. Yeah, we're good. We're good. I agree. Last night was the biggest win, obviously the biggest win of this very young season, but it might be the biggest win I think the Jazz have had in a couple of years. To go to win a road game in a place they haven't won since 2010, in a place where hardly anybody in the NBA has won at, is impressive. And it was a very good win. It wasn't wire to wire. The Spurs did come back, take a lead momentarily in the fourth quarter, but it was a great, great win.
That was the impressive part when the Spurs took the lead in the third, and you just kind of felt like, oh, here we go, because that's what happened in the Clippers game. Jazz played great, and then once the Clippers got ahead, the Jazz could not pull it back together. But they were able to hang in there, and Trey Lyles came to life, and Gobert got after it on defense, and they were just able to, you know, weather the storm. The bench played really well for them, and then the starters were able to finish it off once they came back in. But yeah, I mean, that was inspirational, and it's been a mark for them because the bench hasn't been that great so far because of the injuries. But the Spurs bench was, the Jazz bench outplayed the Spurs bench. And, you know, that's what a lot of them needed. Now we're getting a lot of inconsistency from our bench players. Like, for example, Trey Lyles was scoreless in the Dallas game, but, you know, if the right guys can catch fire at the right time, then this bench is going to be fine. And then when Hayward gets back and you have Joe Johnson anchoring things, then I'm going to be super confident about everything that's going on.
You know, and it's not just the bench that's been inconsistent. I was going to ask you, now that we've had a chance to look at a very small sample size right now, through five games, the Jazz one ugly at home against the Lakers, and I'm underwhelmingly saying ugly. It was a lot more. It was not a pretty game at all. And I might give a little credit to Luke Walton for what he's doing with the Lakers. They're playing real scrappy. They're playing good defense. They're just not a very good team, and it was an ugly, ugly, ugly win. But then you've got games like Sunday where it was a really, really ugly game again, but they lose, and the Clippers run away. But the Clippers only score 88 points. I'm not sure we know what to expect from the Jazz team yet, because then they go on the road at the San Antonio Spurs and play their best game of the season so far. It's do we know what we're going to get from that? Because even tonight, it was really ugly through three quarters. I don't know if we know what to expect yet.
Well, we're going to have a lot more road games coming up. So we're going to, it's going to be a real test. And I would expect that the Jazz's, well, it looks to me like the Jazz's defense is figuring out things quicker than the Jazz offense. When the Jazz have these spurts where they just fall apart. Dallas had a 19-2 run at one point. Against the Spurs, they had a 6-minute stretch where they didn't score. Those are storms that the Jazz are going to have to weather. And, you know, it's tougher to weather those on the road, but it looks like Favors is going to be able to play more minutes, which helps greatly. You know, we now know that we're not going to get Alec Burks back for a while. You know, when they say indefinitely, it could be 3 months. It could be the whole season. We just don't know. So the Jazz just have to plan on him just not doing anything this season. So all they can really control is getting Hayward back. It sounds like Hayward's going to be aiming to come back by next week. That's not, you know, that's a hope. You put a maybe on that, but it is a possibility. So, you know, hopefully the Jazz don't have that many more games without him, and then we can finally see what this team was built to be.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Like you said, they've had some moments where they've really struggled. There's a few things on offense I do like. Okay. And David Locke mentioned it on air tonight. He also tweeted it. The Jazz are really good on spot up threes, which might be a little fool's gold because they're really good on spot up threes, but they haven't really shot the three extremely well through five games either. They've had some pretty bad moments. But at spot up three, they're really good. But then on offense, some other things I've noticed, I don't know if you've been watching, and I paid much more attention tonight in the Dallas game, but the Jazz are trying very hard to dictate matchups early in the game and even early in quarters, early in the offense for that matter, where you got, where Rudy comes to set a pick for Hill and you suddenly have mismatches. And then you and I, on the Jedi and Germs account, you and I were back and forth a minute tonight. I don't know if you saw my response, but there was a play where Joe Johnson had the ball on the right wing and he got the ball and he got a mismatch on a matchup because of a screen. Well, while that's going on, you have a second screen going on the left side of the floor in the corner, leaving Hill all alone because Barea is now guarding him and Barea backs off. Joe Johnson drives inside and has a drive and kick to a cutting, slashing George Hill. Jazz are really getting a lot of switches on offense now, and they're getting a lot of mismatches. You go to the Spurs game, you had George Hill oftentimes getting the mismatch of an older, slower Manu Ginobili guarding him, and he abused him every time. And I like what I'm seeing. It seems like there's a lot more mismatches to try and get guards and big men. You know, even Joe Johnson having to go against Tony Parker, having to guard him. It was very interesting to see some of these mismatches. Quinn is getting the opportunity early to dictate these matchups and force the other team, last night Popovich, to make adjustments. I like what I'm seeing so far.
Oh.
Okay, both of you are cheering. What's going on?
Woo!
Is that the game?
Cubs just scored.
Oh, the Cubs just scored. All right.
Now it's 7-6. And you still got men on second and third.
Wow. All right. So
oh, that was
this,
sweet.
This
that
is
was a double.
This and then and we're at the top of the 10th inning. So
this is a live breaking podcast that you all are probably listening to a good 24, 48 hours after the fact.
All right. So you're hearing history as we're talking about this. But back to my observation. Did you notice some of the things I'm talking about, John? It seems like Quinn is really trying very early on to dictate the matchups, force the other guy, the other coach, to make adjustments. And we haven't seen a Jazz team be able to do that in years.
Yeah, he has the personnel where he can do that, and I do like that he's the one who's saying where he's forcing our will on the other team.
Yeah,
exactly. There was a point tonight where he just kind of went, you know what, small ball's not working. I want to go big, and so he put Favors in there, and then Carlisle, he had to make a sub right afterwards because it was just immediately crushing them. I feel bad for Carlisle. That there's just not much to that team.
No, there isn't. And Carlisle's a great coach, but that team's past its prime. It's past its time. There isn't much left there for Carlisle to work with, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I think they have all their assets, which is good for them. But
yeah, but no, and that's so again, to finish off that thought, no, I agree with you. I'm very excited for the fact that Quinn has the capabilities with the versatility of the team as a whole to be able to switch matchups like that and dictate the matchups and pace of the game and insert his will on the opponent and force the other team to make adjustments. We've watched the Spurs do this for so long. We've watched Golden State do this the last few years. Jazz are starting to get into their own and saying, hey, we can rule this court at times too. Watch out.
Yep.
So those are my observations, at least from a positive standpoint, like you said, and our observations from a negative standpoint. Defensively, I think they're sound, and you're right. They're going to have to win balls with their defense, their ball games with their defense. They're going to have to. Devin, don't give me that look.
Oh my gosh, bases are loaded.
Good.
Oh,
we can move to bases are loaded without talking about
them dictating the tempo and inserting their will and balls.
Exactly. It's all good. It's all good.
Scoring positions,
penetration.
Yeah. That's got really
all right,
weird.
All right, let's move on. Next topic. So the Jazz 3-2. Let's take a look at what's ahead before our next episode.
A lot of wins.
We've got the Spurs on Friday at home.
Yep.
We go on the road on Sunday at
The Knicks,
and Monday back-to-back against
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia
should win.
John, what's the score?
Eight,
John?
8-6. 8-6. Cubs just got another run.
Are there any outs yet?
No, and the bases are still loaded.
No, there's an out.
Oh, there is an out.
Okay, so by the time we record our next episode, sorry to stop you again, we'll have seen the Jazz play three more road games and one home game. Because there's a game next Tuesday night. So what's going to be the record over the next four games?
You know, it should be 3-1 over these next four. But I'm going to go ahead and say 2-2. There's going to be one loss they had that will feel like they shouldn't have had. So,
and I'm going to
put them at 5-4.
And I'm going to say that Friday night might be one of those losses. I realize you got to protect home court. So I'm praying and hoping I'm going to be at the game. All of you listening, I'm going to be at the game on Friday. I hope you're all there. I hope we're just screaming and yelling at it. But it's a game against the Spurs, and they already have. I mean, I don't know. I was listening on the radio today. Kawhi Leonard already has Friday night penciled into his mind that says, you know what, we got to go take back what's ours. We lost at home. Now we got to come into Salt Lake and take back.
That's true. This is the team that wasted the Warriors.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not saying much. The Warriors struggled with the Suns.
All right, fine.
They don't scare me.
Maybe the Jazz just have the Spurs number this year. Maybe the Spurs are going to go, 78-4.
It's not it's not the Spurs that we're worried about, John. You know what the problem was?
Pray tell.
It was Tim Duncan.
This is true. Tim Duncan's had their number. It is, and he has since, well, after the Jazz went to the finals, because the Jazz owned him up until the years they went to the finals.
Well, when was Duncan drafted? Wasn't it like 99?
No, he was drafted. He was drafted the year before the Jazz went to the finals, that second year, the first year.
98, 97?
Yeah, because
the Jazz. Is he that far back?
Yeah, the Jazz faced off against him in the second round of the playoffs that year that they swept the Lakers. So that 98, it was the summer of 97, I believe he was drafted.
Well, didn't the Spurs win the championship in 99?
Yes, they did.
And Tim Duncan was a sophomore, I think.
Yes, he was
in his second year when they won. So
since 99, 17 years.
Yeah.
It has been all Tim Duncan. So he's gone now. So maybe we can take back. Maybe we can take back what's ours.
Yep, there it is. 1997 draft. Tim Duncan, Keith Van Horn, Chauncey Billups, Antonio Daniels, Tracy McGrady, Brevin Knight, Scott Pollard, Bobby Jackson,
wow.
A few other people.
I'm already thinking of the teams all these guys ended up on. Wow. Okay. So it's it'll be interesting, but I'm with you. I think 2-2 is a safe bet over the next four. Okay, let's shift from there. Let's go to what's next.
Well, I just want to say you guys are wrong.
Why?
The Jazz will lose the game against the Spurs. They're going to win the rest of them.
You think they're going to be 3-1 over their next four?
Do you think 3-1?
Yeah, I'll give it to them. They're starting to click. They'll get Hayward back. Well, I guess they won't get Hayward back before we talk next time.
They're
kind of starting to find their groove, I think. So I'm comfortable with 3-1.
Okay, and if they go 3-1, then that puts them at 6-3, right?
Yes.
That's a good mark to start the season without Hayward, mind you.
That's a great mark.
Yeah, without Hayward and with Favors on limited minutes.
I will say that I'm just looking at the Knicks' schedule. They're 1-3 right now. Their defense has been pretty bad. Every team they've played so far has been able to score over 100 points on them. And their only win came when they were able to beat Memphis 111-104. It is a home game, and the Knicks crowd is usually pretty good. But, you know, it's still the Knicks.
Yep. I thought for sure they were going to win all their games.
Go Jeff Hornacek. No. Okay, so let's shift quickly. Jazz news. You already mentioned one. We heard via ESPN earlier today that Hayward has a timetable looking at the end of next week, earlier than expected perhaps, but hoping that that's the case. Second bit of news, Alec Burks. As you mentioned, you've already mentioned that, out indefinitely. Final bit of news that we haven't brought up yet that everybody knows about by now. On Halloween, Rudy Gobert signs an extension.
A big extension.
Yep. Yeah, big extension. And I'm not at all bothered by it either.
No, when I see the details, I don't have them in front of me, but it was 102, so it's less than the max, and some of that is with some incentives and goals he has to hit and stuff. So
I think it's backloaded.
Guaranteed is like 90 million,
and I think it's backloaded. I think early on it's what, 22 mil the first year, 20 mil the first year or so. I think so. I think it's backloaded. Like with all those incentives, he'll make the most of that contract towards the back end. I think, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's a good contract. It's a good signing. It shores up, you know, Gobert with us for a bit. I think it puts confidence in the remainder of the players the Jazz have. They know, okay, you know.
I like the explanation that one of the benefits of extending Rudy now is showing Hayward that we're serious about.
Exactly.
Keeping this all together.
That was where I was going with that. And it's not just Hayward, it's everybody. It just really it sends the message around the league that the Jazz are going to dish out the money to keep their guys and to make a statement to move forward. So no, it's a good move. And they don't strap themselves assuming that Hayward comes back next year and signs with the Jazz again. So, no, I like the move. I like it a lot. They've got confidence in what Rudy can bring, so it's a great signing.
Yeah, now it's a matter of, I mean, can they extend George Hill? Because he is off to an incredible start.
Yes, he is.
And, I mean, if there's a way to do it, if I was the Jazz, I'd be doing whatever I could to just lock him up now if they can.
Well, the problem is I think October 31st was the final day to extend anybody on the team.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay.
So all extensions are signed. You can't do anything else till the end of the season. So at this point in time, deals are done.
And he's unrestricted. So if they can't do anything to extend him, then he's going to be unrestricted. And if he plays the remaining 77 games like he has the first five, then he is going to be up for a big payday too.
Yes, he will.
Well, we better bench him.
Yep.
That's the only thing that makes sense.
And you know what? To be honest, we've all talked about this, and I'm going to stand by it. I still think Exum, it will be starting by midseason. Not just because George Hill's played, you know, not nothing to do with the way George Hill's playing. He's playing well. But I think Exum is learning, growing. He's going to get better. And I think towards the middle or by All-Star break, I think we're going to see Exum in a position where they're going to start him and they're going to transition back to him. I think that's on the horizon.
I'm starting to second guess that.
Are you?
I am. I'll tell you why. I had a brief conversation with Tony Jones about this. And he was saying, you know, well, what do you do? Because you see the Jazz offense really is stagnant when they don't have Hill out there right now. And they'll have Hayward back. And yes, that's an argument of saying, okay, well, maybe we put Hill on the bench. But I don't know. I'm starting to think that maybe Quinn adjusts his rotation to do that two point guard backcourt with Exum and Hill and kind of uses that to get Exum in the game sooner so that he can just move over and then kind of rotate Rodney in after that, because we're not getting Burks back.
Not for a while, no.
So I kind of get the feeling that maybe that's something that they would look at, but I don't know.
I have a thought on that, but John, you were going to say something.
Well, I mean, the Jazz are in a win now mode and looking at the playoffs, and the way George Hill is playing and the way Dante Exum is playing, I just don't see that happening. I see Hill starting the entire year. I mean, Dante would need to make some strides that he's not making now to justify putting him in the starting lineup.
And to your point, I agree. That's the reason why I don't see the change being made. However, what I was going to go back to is something Devin was making a point. I was going to go back and talk about it for a moment. Dante, at moments, has looked really good. Defensively, we already know what he's capable of, and he's showing that. Offensively, he's had his moments, but I also believe part of his reason for his uncomfortability on offense is he's been playing out of position, although I get it. We're trying for positionless basketball. We want guys that are versatile, that can play most positions. I still think Dante's natural spot is at the point. He's not at the point, and he doesn't play much of that because Mac is getting the time at the point. I wonder when that rotation starts to tighten and maybe Mac starts losing out on minutes at the point, and they start putting Dante in as the backup and start shifting him to that point where he can take over the starting spot. Thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the Jazz are better off when Dante's at the one. The positionless basketball right now means that I think he's only had like 2 minutes as the one, and the rest of it has been as the backup too.
Exactly.
But I just like the team better when he's playing at the one. But there is the consideration that, you know, if they're not going to get Burks back, then who is your backup to if it's not Dante, you know?
Unless you play Joe as your backup too when you get Hayward back.
Yeah, but Joe, I don't really see that. I mean, they've already played him at the four sometimes.
Yeah, they have. And they've played him at the three, obviously, quite a bit to play in Hayward's spot. I don't know. Some things to think about.
Maybe the reason that you don't like Dante at the two is because of the point guard that he's getting stuck playing with.
With Mac?
Yeah.
No, and that was the point I was trying to make. That's why they may end up squeezing Mac out a little bit. I'm not sure if that's a, I'm not sure if the two of them work well on the floor together. I don't know.
I'm going to say negative
things.
Yeah, maybe
with your tightest lineup. Say what?
I'm going to say negative things about Mac because when I did that last week, he had a really good game, I believe, against San Antonio.
Oh, yes, he did.
He had a fantastic,
he came out on fire. He scored 8 quick points.
Shooting night, so maybe if I continue to say negative things, I'm doing whatever I can here, guys. I'm honestly trying to help.
And we so appreciate it. Okay, so, all right, let's move away from Jazz basketball. Let's move to the rest of the NBA, NBA news. Anything jump out at you? I mean, tonight before we started the show, it jumped out at you that the Mavericks were 0-4 before, or 0-3 before playing the Jazz, and now 0-4. Any other surprises around the league right now? Are you surprised that Golden State's struggling?
Well, they're not struggling. They only lost the one game.
I know, but even in the wins, they've looked like they've had to toy a little bit, struggle. I mean, Devin mentioned that they had to go down the wire against Phoenix.
Yeah.
Does that surprise you?
A little bit. I guess it was naive to think that they would have it all working perfectly together right out of the gate. You know, the price of getting Kevin Durant meant that their bench was thinner, and they still got to get used to each other. And, you know, Pachulia isn't living up to what I thought he was going to be able to be as their center. But, you know, it's kind of like LeBron's first year back at Cleveland, where it took him a while to figure it out. It took him a while how to integrate him and Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving all together. And, you know, it's not that big of an adjustment because all you really done is bring in Kevin Durant. And now they just got to get used to having him there and not have Harrison Barnes and Andrew Bogut and so forth. So I'm not surprised. I mean, a month ago I would have been, but I mean, realistically, with how NBA seasons are, I'm not that surprised.
Okay, here's something to throw out at you. I was doing some searching on best defenses in the NBA. I bet neither one of you, without looking, can tell me who the number one defensive team is in the NBA.
Atlanta.
You are correct. That's a good guess. They're holding teams to 88 points per game right now.
Wow, 88?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. The Jazz, this was as of last night after the Spurs. The Jazz were ranked 8th in the league, allowing 96.7, I think. Atlanta at the top of the league, 88 points per game they're allowing. And the argument might be they haven't played anybody yet. And that could be very true. But there's yeah. there, and guess who was number 3 on that list last night? You will never guess number 3 on that list. Huh?
The Rockets?
Nope. You're never going to guess.
Well, I guess the Rockets. That was my never going to be the Rockets.
Yeah, I'm going to go deeper.
Grizzlies.
Go deeper.
I forgot what we're trying to guess.
The third best defense points per game
team.
in the NBA.
Sixers.
We've played them already.
Lakers?
Yes.
Well.
Okay, so small sample size. Again, we're 5-6 games into the season. I'm just saying, guys. Luke Walton's heading directions here. Come on.
Okay, going by defensive rating, actually the best defensive now, if you go by offensive and defensive rating, the best defense now tied is the Clippers and the Thunder.
Okay. Now, I went purely by opponent's points per game. That's where I was going. Now, you're going a little deeper here, but opponent's points per game.
All right, let me go back to the traditional
While you're looking, Devin, what do you got? One out?
There is one out. The Cubs are one out
Two
away.
Outs.
No, one.
One out away.
From
That's
a
right.
World
They're
Series.
Up 8-6, one out away.
Andy steps to the plate.
Who's pitching? Did they stick with Chapman still?
I do not believe so. There is someone else there. I am not a Cubs fan any other night but tonight.
All right.
That is not Chapman.
Okay, then.
Oh, by the way, now with this Jazz game now factored in, they now have the lowest opponent's points per game.
There you go. There you go. That's how much it's shifting early on in the season. It was just little bits of information I got from my little searching last night. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. If you go by defensive rating, Jazz have the, 11th? I don't expect that to be too good right now when you're a 3-2 team.
Right.
So they've got offense and somewhere in the middle on offense. 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, 15, 16. So they're 16th in offense, 11th on defense. Yeah, you're a 3-2 team. That's about what you're going to be.
And all of this will iron itself out as the season progresses. Again, this is all small sample sizes. Yeah. It's just interesting.
Small sample sizes, and they have a easy enough schedule. I mean, the Spurs game is going to be really tough, but when you're facing the Knicks and the Sixers as your next two, then you should really have a chance to make your stats look good.
Agreed. All right. Any other news around the NBA and other surprises? Anybody?
I didn't think the Pelicans were going to be that good, but I am surprised at just how awesome Anthony Davis is playing while the Pelicans still haven't won a single game. It is criminal that he is on that bad a team.
Can you give an MVP to a guy who is that good on a team that's that bad?
No.
I almost think you have
to. Here he is through his first four games. 37 points, 13.3 rebounds, 3 steals, 3 blocks, 2.5 assists. They're 0-4. Because the second leading scorer on that team, I'll give you wild guesses. You probably won't know.
I'm not going to get it. I just won't.
Wait, what are we guessing?
The second leading scorer on the Pelicans.
Second leading scorer on the Pelicans.
Tim Frazier.
Yes.
Oh, Tim Frazier.
Tim Frazier is the second leading scorer on the Pelicans.
He's dishing the ball pretty well, too.
Oh, Devin.
Yeah.
Devin with the spot on guess there. Or
he's
wow.
A good guy. Likes Ogden.
Okay, I get it.
You think I kid. You no. think I'm kidding.
Yep. There you go. All right.
I know people. I know things.
AD is definitely having himself a season. Can he maintain it over the course of 82 games with a team that's just that poor? That's my question.
No, because halfway through the season, he's going to get sick of it.
Yeah, probably.
He'll get sick
of it. Or he'll get injured, or he'll get just worn out.
Yeah, exactly. I it's not sustainable. He'll have a great season if he can stay healthy. But the way he started, that you can't keep up numbers like that.
No.
You can't. And, I mean, they're supposed to get Tyreke Evans back in another month. Drew Holiday is going through what he's going through, so who knows when he'll be back. That kind of stuff can only help. But man, this team is so thin. They just really need to just blow it up and just get some other pieces. Maybe Buddy Hield will be something, but not right now. And it's just looking like one of the worst moves ever to replace Monty Williams with Alvin Gentry. And Gentry would be my pick for which coach is going to get fired first this season.
And sadly, this is the team that the NBA bailed out a few years ago, and they have never been. Monty Williams had him going somewhere, barely, but since then, nothing. Nothing at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, when they bailed him out, then, like, that summer, they drafted Anthony Davis, and they slowly did build up to be a playoff team. I mean, they were in the playoffs 2 years ago, and then they get rid of Monty Williams thinking that they're making their upgrade move as coach, and it just craters. And this year, it's looking like the same thing. They're just a terrible team.
And you can go back a decade when the Pelicans were a Western Conference power, if you will, with Chris Paul. I mean, that's mm-hmm. where this team's fallen. They fall, they get bailed out, they get Anthony Davis, things look like they're heading the up and up, and then whammo, look where they're at again. It's just insane now, the roller coaster they've been on.
Yeah, in their defense, two of their first four games were against the Spurs and the Warriors, but the other two were home games against the Nuggets and Bucks. And, you know, I think the Nuggets are going to be a pretty decent team. But, you know, maybe the eighth seed. Those are still the kind of games you should be able to win at home. And yet they haven't. They're on four. And it's going to get that much tougher for them. They're playing at the Grizzlies tonight. I haven't seen if that's ended yet or not.
I was just looking.
Scroll, scroll, scroll. They lost. Okay, so now they're 0-5. Oh, they lost in overtime. Poor Pelicans.
Oh, and by the way, after all of the things I said about Atlanta and nobody playing, they lost tonight at home to the Lakers.
Jeez. Oh, speaking of not being able to keep it up, Anthony Davis only had 10 points and 7 rebounds tonight. Looks like this was the game that broke him. So yep. There you go.
So final score of that Lakers-Atlanta game. Lakers beat Atlanta 123-116 at Atlanta. So, yeah.
Yeah, and we got a battle of the undefeateds right now with Thunder taking on the Clippers at the Clippers. That's almost over, and it's only a 2-point game. So.
And your unsung hero for the Lakers was Lou Williams, scoring 16 of his 18 in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
So they're yeah.
Oh, D'Angelo Russell, 23 points, 8 assists. All he needed to do was get away from Kobe Bryant and Byron Scott.
Yeah, right?
Who knew?
But we're just in a very young NBA season. There's a lot of basketball yet to be played, but there's a lot of intriguing storylines early on. So I'd be interested to watch all of it unfold as we continue. And especially here at home, there's some things coming around. It's going to be fun to watch over the next little while. So,
I just noticed the Indians scored. Now it's 8-7.
Uh-oh. With still one out?
Two outs.
Two outs?
Two outs.
Oh. Do we have a game?
Oh, that's good. That's good. Pass to first. And it's over.
The Cubs win it.
The Cubs win the World Series.
Fly the W.
And there you have it. Our live reaction to the Cubs winning the series and breaking that 108 year drought.
Wow. What a game. Alan, cool. I know you're not a basketball or not a baseball guy. Not a basketball guy either. But, we've talked about that. I'm kidding. But John, you watched a lot of this game. I will admit I watched more of this game than I did the Jazz game. What did you think? Is this one of the classic all-time baseball games?
Oh yeah, I mean I usually watch the World Series every year, but you know, this was like one of my favorites, and not just cuz I like the teams, but just the drama of it going up and down. This feels exactly like it felt like when the Red Sox won the World Series for the first time in however many decades, a few years ago.
All right. So, all right. Well, now that this World Series monkey's off of Chicago's back, it's off of our back, we can proceed. We've got all our NBA news. We said this was going to be a quick show tonight. Let's jump to Devin's quick hits.
Oh, I can't do quick hits right now.
You're going to have to.
Just won the World Series.
I'm so excited.
Why isn't there a camera reaction shot of Bill Murray?
How are we missing that?
On that note, hang tight.
You know what would have made this better? I really wanted this to end on a floater.
No, just because of the Rookie of the Year movie? I know.
That's all I wanted.
Yeah, I get it. Sure.
And it was possible. I mean, he could have.
Well, I was watching the bottom of the, what was it, the bottom of the ninth inning I was watching with you, and you're like, just pitch a floater.
It was in the eighth.
Was it the eighth?
Yeah, because in the ninth, yeah. All right.
So
you want to do some quick hits?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do a couple NBA quick hits.
And go.
I know. I know when to start.
Okay, I'm just letting you know.
Don't get sassy with me. All right. The James Harden experiment at point guard is off to a surprisingly good start in my mind. He leads the league currently in assists. I believe he is averaging 11.8 per game based off the last stats that I have. You guys shocked? Does it continue?
Yes, it continues. I'm shocked by the number of assists. I'm not shocked it's working out starting him at the one, because he basically felt like he was the one anyway, because he was always the one to bring the ball up the court and it really didn't matter. So I agree with them just dropping the pretense of that and making him the one. Does he lead the league in assists right now?
Yeah. Number one.
Because he had 15 tonight. So
why don't you tell the listeners what look has been on my face since you dropped that little bit of information?
You look like the Cubs just won the World Series. You look that shocked.
Harden. Wow.
Small sample size, but it is a small sample size.
And he's the single most unwatchable player in the NBA. I'm sorry. I just can't stand to watch the guy play. And now he passes the ball. I might actually have to watch him now.
Well, it's D'Antoni, you know. Maybe D'Antoni figured something out to make Rockets fun again. Fun ever.
Is he gonna make Harden into a Steve Nash? I mean, watch out.
They've actually made hats that say make the Rockets fun again. They're red hats. They fit with their... All right, another quick hit. Ray Allen officially retires.
Yes.
Okay, Ray Allen played for four teams.
Yes.
What is the team you will remember Ray Allen as?
Sonics.
I was going to say Boston first,
The order I go is Sonics, Bucks, Boston, and I don't even remember where he went after that.
After that, his final stop was in Miami.
Yeah. And see, I had forgotten his lonely stop in Bucks land because he was drafted by the Sonics. Right? Played there for how many years? I mean, I remember wasn't he drafted by the Sonics?
I thought he was drafted by the Bucks.
Was he drafted by the Bucks and then traded to the Sonics, or what? What was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he was drafted by the Bucks because he was a Bucks player when he got game came out.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So, but I remember watching him in 2003 against the Jazz, back when it was the Sonics and he was the star player for them. So he was with the Sonics, and then in 2008 is when he signed with Boston. So the Sonics is where I'm used to him. Boston is where I'll probably remember him most from, because that's where the big three and the battles for the championship went for Boston. And then Miami, I'll remember him in Miami, kind of finishing things off. The Bucks is far from my memory, as you already know. I just didn't even remember he was drafted by them. So,
well, the funny thing about Ray Allen, we can talk about how he's retired now. He's a two-time NBA champ, once with the Celtics, once with the Heat. But he hasn't played since 2014.
Nope.
So it feels a little anticlimactic for him to announce his retirement now.
And he chose to do it in the same way that his former Boston teammate did, via the Players Tribune.
Yeah.
So interesting that he chose that route again. I mean, that both of them chose that route.
Well, you see, the reason that I had to ask is when I think of Ray Allen, I think of him in Boston. I just think of him in the white with the Celtic green. But when I think about the Ray Allen moment, it's that corner three that he hit when he was with Miami. And so I have this hard time. Ray Allen, peak Ray Allen is that moment, one moment.
And see, you have those memories. Peak Ray Allen to me was the guy averaging 25, 26 points per game. And you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong. I don't remember the averages, but when he was with Seattle, he was their go-to guy. And he was putting 20-something points a game.
He was averaging over 30 points a game every year he was with Seattle.
Thank you.
And
thank
Seattle
you.
is my second team. So, I'm very aware of the Sonics. I was very sad when they went away. And so he's when I think of Ray, I go there just because that used to be my second team. But I mean, ultimately, NBA-wise, it's got to be the big three when Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce were all able to get together via trade to form the big three and build that championship team.
And the thing I remember him for in Seattle was he was a gunslinger. Seriously, just the quick shooter, quick release, just dropping him. And then he goes to Boston, where he is a part of a big three. So he's part of the bigger picture. And it was a growing up stage for him. But yeah, those are some of my memories for Ray.
And just a note, 2,973 three-pointers in his career.
Oh, to me,
that's a lot of threes.
Even with Steph Curry in the game right now, to me, Ray Allen and Reggie Miller, to me, are the three-point specialists of all time. Now, granted, you know, Steph Curry's heading that way, and he's already there. But Ray Allen and Reggie are, for me, memory-wise, the two best shooters I've ever watched.
Let's jump on to the next. Tiger Woods says he'll return to competitive golf on December 2nd. Do we care?
I like Tiger. Yes, I care.
John, do you care?
As much as I can care about golf, I care that Tiger Woods would be coming back.
Does he succeed?
I can't.
No, I don't think
ratings
so.
Ratings will be affected by him coming back.
And Tiger's the reason I got into golf. I never cared for golf until Tiger started playing.
Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you who the best golfers are right now. Is it Rory?
No, Jordan Spieth. Like Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and I can't remember who. Those are top two or three.
Isn't there a Bubba that's really good?
Yeah, but I think Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy are your two of your top
three. Oh, there's
three.
Bill Murray. Oh, they did it for me. Thank you.
Okay.
Right. College football playoffs. You're starting for Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, and Texas A&M.
In the BCS, right?
This is the college football playoff rankings.
Right. So, yes.
With that, University of Washington, on the outside looking in, undefeated.
At number five.
Do they deserve to be in at this point?
Who were the other teams again? Alabama.
The Texas A&M is their number four, but they do have a loss, but it was a hard-fought loss against Alabama, so I understand them not wanting to be penalized too much. But that means you have Washington is out, and that doesn't seem right either. I struggle with that.
At the moment, it's probably fair at the moment. I want to see how it plays out. Personally, I think the Pac-12 is having a down year. A lot of teams had higher expectations. They've beat each other up, but I think it's been a lackluster year for the Pac-12. So I think that hurts Washington, and I think that's part of the reason. I think their best win of the year was Stanford, and look at what Stanford's been since.
Their best win now is against Utah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's what I was going to say. Their second best win, or ultimately now is their best win, was against Utah. It's just been a really tough down year, I think, for the Pac-12. Disagree or agree with that, Devin? You're a Pac-12 watcher. I mean, would you disagree with me on that, or you think the Pac-12 is having one of those lackluster years?
It's tough to say because you're starting to see more balance in the Pac-12 because Utah's gotten there. Colorado is a big surprise this year.
Oh, that game against Utah to finish off the season is going to be a big one.
That's a monster game. That's one of those where you could potentially have College Game Day show up for something like that. Now they won't because I believe you've got a matchup of like Ohio State and Michigan or something to close out the season. So there's going to be something bigger, obviously, but it's right up there if the teams continue to win.
Right.
But you see more balance. You know, Oregon's kind of fallen off from what we thought of Oregon a few years ago. Stanford seemed like they were going to start out really well and then just completely.
And USC started out the gate slow, but they've come on strong.
Exactly. So I think you're seeing more balance across the conference, whereas before you had maybe two or three who were your clear front runners, you know, completely untouchable. And it just kind of shifted because you look at like UCLA's having a down year. And I don't think many people expected that. Stanford having a down year. Obviously, no one expected that with how highly they were ranked to start the season. So, I don't know. You really don't know how good your conference is, I would say, until you start matching up in those bowl games at the end of the year. And that seems to be what we suffer with the SEC, is they don't play a lot of out-of-conference games against other P5s. They seem to play nobody teams and then just play with themselves. And, you know, then you get to the bowls, and if they're not really competing, that's how you have another team come in, smack them in the mouth, and you get this SEC is overrated talk.
Right. No, I agree. Okay.
God, let's do. Did you guys see the Cavs or LeBron James Halloween party? There was a bass drum with a nice front that had 3-1 lead.
I did, and I was just thinking about how it's ironic now.
Don't you
think the Cavs, the Cleveland Indians blew a 3-1 lead.
A little too ironic.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're supposed to say, and yeah, I really do think.
All right, fine. Yeah, I really do think. I bite. Go ahead. It's like rain. yeah. I don't even know what to say to that. I don't.
All right. Well, let's just finish on this. 2016. Is this going to be one of the greatest years in sports in our lifetimes? When you stop and you think about, you had a good matchup, I think, in the Super Bowl.
Well, you had a player go out on top after who might have been one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game.
You had a very classic moment in that.
Right.
You had the Cavs coming back from the 3-1 deficit
right.
to beat the all-time win record, regular season win record, Golden State Warriors.
You had Michael Phelps put on a dominating performance in what could be his last
Olympics. We had the Olympics, yeah.
You're right. For all that this year started out to be, it's turned out to be quite a good year for sports. Yeah, it has. Could be one of the greatest we've watched for a while. I'd have to go back and look through the history books. I can't think of... I don't know.
Your big three, Peyton Manning's last game, Cavs pull off the amazing come from behind win, Cubs win World Series. I mean, I'd guess they'd have to go back and see what else happened when the Red Sox won their first time. But yeah, this is probably it. This is probably the best one.
Now finish that off by quoting that tweet that we all talked about before it came on.
Well, there's two that we need to discuss. John, do you have the one available about what we're dealing with?
The Rays one? No, I don't have it up.
There was a tweet that said that in 2016, the Indians and the Cubs were going to go to the World Series. It's going to be a tie going to extra innings, and then...
The world's
going to
end.
The world was going to end. So,
and this was 2 years ago. It was tweeted, and folks, the world's not over yet.
I'm still here. That's why I was so interested in how this was going to go. And I guess the other thing we need to talk about. I saw a tweet, and it said that in the last 8 times a World Series has gone to a Game 7 in a presidential election year, when the American League team wins, which would have been the Indians, the White House goes to the Republican Party. When the National League team wins, the Democrats win the White House.
Well,
does the trend hold?
Yesterday I would have confidently said yes, but polls are tightening. But if the election was today, then Hillary would win. But she's been trending down, so she needs to... Oh my gosh, they just put more states in toss-up. Wow.
You're getting live reaction. Yeah, live reaction about Hillary.
I don't know about you guys. Next Tuesday, we usually record on Tuesday's election night. I'm going to be glued to my TV.
Yeah, we won't be recording. Well, there's a Jazz game that night, too.
Tonight.
I'm going to be in the corner crying, so.
There's not a Jazz game next Tuesday. It's Monday and Wednesday.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. My bad. That's right. That's right.
So
we'll see. There's still time tonight. Yeah.
I was hoping for a Jazz game that night so I could go bury myself in the Jazz game and not have to think about politics, but oh well.
You can only do that for so long. Eventually the season ends.
This will all be over.
Yes, it will. All right. Well, let's cap this show off. I think that puts the final touches on it tonight. Shortened edition, although I don't think we ended up being quite as short as we thought we would. But Cubs win, Jazz win. Good night for Jedi and Germs. You hit us up, folks, Facebook, Twitter, Jedi and Germs. You can listen, download at blogtalkradio.com/Jedi and Germs on iTunes and Stitcher, Jedi and Germs, anywhere your podcasting desires are filled, you can find us. Hit us up, hit us up on your thoughts on this week's show. How about the World Series and the Cubs? Tell us what you think. We'd love to hear about it. We can talk about it on the next show. Thank you for joining us. Talk to you next week. Go Jazz, and John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.